Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 3 Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan Page 64 There is another meaning. When you desire to maintain the worlds, you maintain the pure form of Vishnu without a mixture of the gunas. Vishnu is not associated with gunas like Shiva and Brahma. Sukadeva states this. Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principle of material ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.3 The Lord, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Lord, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships Him becomes similarly free from the material modes. So, Vishnu, to maintain, even though he's taking the position of representing the mode of goodness, he's still functioning in pure goodness. It's not that he takes on the material mode of goodness. He doesn't need to. Because point is, goodness means in the present. And what is your duty, what you're supposed to be done, you know, having proper knowledge and all that. So pure goodness just means that, you know, in context of Krishna consciousness. And the Lord being conscious of himself, then it's already included. Right? So he doesn't require to maintain the universe to take on the material mode of goodness. Right, because everything's expanding from in him in that in transcendental in Vishuddha Sattva. But Shiva, then to work with what he's doing, he needs to take on these qualities. Because he's working with the material energy. And so she being Triguna Mayi, she has those three modes. And to deal with those three aspects, then he takes on the three forms of false ego and goodness, passion, ignorance. So the Taijasa, Tamasa, and Vaikarika. Right? Like that. Because the principle is the avidya, agyana. But he is the Lord. But taking on this mood, then it changes, like milk turns into yogurt. And being in that position, it's not going to go back to milk. So you can't say they're the same. They're the same, but they're not. Right? So Shiva is the same as the Lord, but at the same time as taking on these material egos, then he's not. He's still Purusha, it's still his energy, that's what it says. Shiva is united with his personal energy. Right? Because Vishnu is connected with the internal potency. But as he's transformed, she's transformed. So then you get Shiva and Parvati. Right? So Krishna is interacting with Yogamaya. Then as she transforms the Mahamaya, then Vishnu is taking that mood of Shiva. Does that make sense? So they're the same, but at the same time they're different. Yes.
Maharaj, it seems that Shiva also demonstrates this male quality of following the prakriti, like responding like Krishna.
Yes. Means the principle of the masculine responding to the feminine is the whole process. Because otherwise, then where's relationship? See, if you have the masculine being the source of the energy, then if the masculine doesn't interact with the energy based on the energy's position, then where's the relationship? So that's just the idea. So the mistake comes up in the material world because if one's thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer, but one is actually prakriti, one's energy, then one takes that mood of energy and that's how you're going to enjoy. Because prakriti enjoys by being the center of attention. Right? But they become the center of attention through service. You render service, that way you become the center of attention. Right? But in the spiritual platform, then that position is for pleasing Krishna, because he is the Supreme Lord. Right? But the difficulty comes is that, and Shiva, being Purusha also, and being the transformation of the Lord, he's also not going to have any problem there. Right? So he's also going to be submissive to his energy. But it still doesn't mean that he's not in control. It just means in the mood and activities, that means that the attitude and all that, one has that mood of submission. Right? So in the material world, one can either follow the duties and understanding and practice like that, and then things work very smoothly, or one can become more materially engrossed and think that I'm the controller and enjoyer, so therefore I'm the center. And so then the problem comes up is that then you have the so-called male, you know, it means the forms male, the way of thinking and all that would be masculine, but they're trying to become the center of attention, like the female. So then the point is who's better at becoming the center of attention, the male or the female? Right? The female, that's what they do. That's how they know. So there's no competition there. Right? It means the man thinks he's giving, you know, the lady a run for her money, but not at all. Right? He just smiles and does that overwhelm her? Okay, if you're 5 years old, maybe. You know? But when you're older, no, not at all. But the woman, all she has to do is smile and she's in control. So it's just a matter of understanding. It's based on relationship. It's not about control and enjoy. Right? It's about the relationship. So that's how it works. It means the masculine overtly is in control, but the feminine is covertly in control. So it looks like the masculine is in control, but it's actually the feminine is in control. And that's the feminine nature. They like to do things subtly. To be gross is not, it's not actually the feminine nature. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole point, is that the feminine thinks where the females are with men and then they act like men. Generally, those storylines are written by men, not by women. Women don't do that because it's not very effective, right? Does that make sense? It's not very effective. So, but the females may use that masculine attitude with other women. You know, just to, you know, show who's more boss. But amongst the men, they don't do that because it's just not very, it's not that effective. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the crocodile is strong in the water, not on the land. So, therefore, they always get you in the water. Like, elephants like water. That's where you get them. Crocodiles don't like land. Just things to eat happen to be on the land. So either you wait for them to come to the water, or if need be, if they're not paying attention, you might come out and grab them and drag them back in the water. But the point is, the water is the place. Yes?
I'm not clear on the Shiva Tattva. It sounds like Vishnu, he is who he is always, never changes his position. And
yes.
Shiva, from the previous description, it sounds like according to the function he performs, he identifies with that function. Is
yes.
that right?
Yes, basically. So having identified with that, that's what then puts it into that position. Just like us. Are we of this material world?
No.
But by identifying with it, then we're called conditioned. So he then takes on that mood and then eternally is in that position. Because you have jivas who are in that conditioned state, therefore that has to be managed. Right? So then Shiva manages that. Does that make sense? Because for us to function, we have to have an identity. And that identity is going to be mundane. And therefore, in the three modes, within, you know, either purely in one or in any combination, we're going to function within these false egos. So Lord Shiva is in charge of these false egos. So that's how the living entity is functioning. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole idea is that you have to have this function going on. It's just a matter of Yes, it means anything you're doing within material consciousness has to be controlled by the three modes. That means you're dealing with the three kinds of false ego. Right? But that's why it says then for the devotees, one who worships him, meaning Lord Vishnu, because he has no connection with material modes, then he becomes similarly freed from the material modes. Because now if your identity is servant of Krishna, that can be performed without any modes. You don't require modes to be servant of Krishna. Therefore, as you're situated in that, you're also free from the modes. Does that make sense? Then it's just a matter of being stable in that. So when the devotee is fully absorbed in the service, he's freed from the modes. But then if he becomes absorbed in the external energy, he becomes, you know, somewhat controlled. Right? And then as you go, that's why we say it's unstable devotional service, anishta bhakti, and stable devotional service, anishta bhakti. So unstable means sometimes you're transcendental, sometimes you're not. And then when it's nishta bhakti means basically you're transcendental and occasionally you're not. Then you get to bhava and then you're always transcendental. Now whether it's being absorbed in Krishna or not, to that degree, then that's the consideration. But you're already liberated. You're functioning on that platform. Okay? So yes.
Also there's mention that to destroy a false ego, we worship Shiva. And then to build up a real identity, then we worship Krishna. Is that correct? Should we actually do that?
But what Shiva? What form of Shiva? That's the point that's there. Is that how will you get rid of the false ego unless your worship, it means if we worship Krishna because he's free from the material modes, then we become free from the material modes.
Yeah.
So if we're worshiping Shiva who's controlled by the modes, how would we become freed from the modes? It's not logical.
Right.
So that means then we have to be dealing with Sadashiv, who's Vaishnava. Right? Means his expansion is Shambhu, you know, is also devotee and all that, but we're not worshipping Shambhu, we're worshipping Sadashiva. So Sadashiva and Mahavishnu are non-different, just different attitude. Mahavishnu is I'm the controller, maintainer, and destroyer, but as Sadashiva, he's the destroyer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So from that aspect, because Mahavishnu has all these three moods, then the effect of that destruction, that's done by Sadashiva. Just like Hiranyagarbha, the creation, that's done by Brahma. Right? But we see as he's breathing out, he's breathing in. And while he's breathing out, it's maintained, and then when he breathes in, it's destroyed. Right? So breathing out is created, it's maintained, and then you breathe back in. So that's why you have in yoga the three. You have the exhale, the inhale, and then the holding of the, what's that, Rechika or something like that. So you have all those three, because one is the creation, one's the maintenance, and one's the destruction. That's why it says when the air's not moving, the breath's not moving, that's when the mind's peaceful. So pranayama, we're doing it. It means you're doing the pranayama in and out and all those things. It will, you know, it will give some regulation, because the regulation will make peaceful mind. But actually, you have to get to the point where you stop breathing. That's why it said you put the internal air into the external air, and then the two stop. So then the yogi stops breathing. At that point, then the mind is focused. Then you pull in all the senses. Right? Then you focus on one thing. Then that one thing becomes Vishnu, and then you go. Then that deepens, it becomes samadhi. So that's why Arjuna said, you know, it's not going to work. And that's Dwapara Yuga, you know, like that. So let alone now.
For Dhruva Maharaj, it worked.
That's Satya Yuga, because that is the process. When you have 60,000 years to, you know, to play around with, and that's just for the yoga, then you still have 40,000 after that. But some people you see in 10,000 years became perfect. But you see, it's quite standard that 60,000, you know, like that. So Dhruva Maharaj to do that in 6 months, that's really unique. That's really special. Because most others, you see, is 10,000 years or more. Is that okay? Yeah. So it's Sadashiva. So therefore we're worshipping there. So since it's Sadashiva, then that's already included in Advaitacharya. So therefore by worshipping the Panchatattva, you're already attaining that point. Because the point is if it's just Shiva, the demigod, but he's controlled by the modes. Maybe he has willingly accepted that, but he's eternally accepting that. Right? So only Sadashiva is beyond the modes. But he's in control of those who are in the modes. That's how he expands as the Devata. You know, just like, you know, in Mahakalapura, then he takes care of all those who are absorbed in Brahman, and all the Brahma bodies. So as long as they're absorbed, they stay there, and as soon as then they start to think of material things, then he sends them back into a universe. So the point is to get beyond is Sadashiva. So, but he's a devotee. Right. Does that make sense? So you're dealing with a whole different thing here. So for us, that's very easy as Mahavishnu. I mean, as the Advaitacharya. So it's by his grace means we're giving up the false ego. By giving up the false ego, I don't identify as a controller and enjoyer. Therefore, then you can get the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and be freed from material desire. Right? And then with that, then you can actually understand the Dham. Right? Does that make sense? Because the Dham is Bhu. Right? So in Sri Bhu and Nila, then Bhu would be connected in this case with the Kriya Shakti. Right, the activities are working with the Dham and the elements of the Dham, right? So that's, and Nityananda Prabhu is in charge of Kriya, right? And so Advaita is in charge of Jnana. So by changing the mood from I'm the conditioned mood, I'm the controller and enjoyer, into I'm servant of Krishna, now you bring it from material to spiritual. So the Jnana Shakti is in charge of the attitude. Right? So in the spiritual world, it's whether it's sweetness or majesty. But then between the spiritual world and material world is whether I'm servant of Krishna or not. So that juncture between it, that's the extension of the Jnana Shakti, right? Right? I mean, so Mahanarayan, then as Sankarsana, his expansion is as Mahavishnu. That's where now you see the manifestation of dealing with the material energy. But specifically, then he's doing that as Sadashiva. So that mood of Sadashiva is there in Balaram, but you don't see it manifest. Right? Then as Mahanarayan, you don't see it manifest. Then as the Chaturvyuha, you don't see it manifest. But as Mahavishnu, that's where it comes in, because he has that mood. Because we're reading, I don't remember the name, but in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami then mentions that this attitude of dealing with the external energy is there in Balaram. That's just making the difference there. Because Krishna then is the Lord of the Icha Shakti, but Balaram's the Lord of the Kriya. So now in Kriya, and then his expansion is Jnana. So Kriya and Jnana, that's what the secondary attributes are. Right? The external form. The primary is Icha's, Krishna's pleasure. Yes. Right? So you already see with Balaram, you're dealing with that. Does that make sense? So now Balaram dealing with that, that means then that's the aspect of the Dham, and then there's the existence of the Dham and the attitudes and all those kind of things like that. Right? And the Jnana. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So therefore with getting Lord Nityananda's mercy, who's Balaram, then you can understand the Dham, because the Dham is his consort. Does that make sense? Then, by the grace of the six, then in that attitude, then you can appreciate the teachings of the six Goswamis. Right? So then, getting their mercy, the mercy of the Acharyas, then you're able to understand Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Does that make sense? So that's what we're dealing with. So it's not just, I worship Shiva, but the point is, You kind of need to know what's going on here a bit. You know what I'm saying? Because the principle is, yes, worship Shiva, but the point is the thing is why Shiva? Because he's in control of false ego. So Sadashiva, then that's before. That's in the primary. But as Shambhu, then he's already involved. So if you're worshiping the Devata Shambhu, and just seeing him as a Devata, how you'll get free from the modes? Because he's not. Right? But if you are in worshiping Shambhu, you see Sadashiva, and you see Advaitacharya, then in that condition, then you can. So it's not worship of Shiva. It's that particular aspect of worship of Shiva. Is knowing who he is. How this transformation is taking place. So you have to understand he's Krishna, but in this attitude. So that's why you can get free. You can't just get free by worshiping a demigod. It's like Brahma, we respect him as the head of the Sampradaya, not as the demigod Brahma. I mean, that you have to respect because he's the senior most Brahmana. But we're gaining spiritual knowledge because of the understanding of his position as the servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? So it has to be very clear. Otherwise, it means what we've been given by Srila Prabhupada, without thinking about it, it works. You just worship the Panchatattva, it works. But if you're going to get into these more technical points of like worship of Shiva, you have to understand what you're mechanically dealing with. Otherwise, you won't get what you're looking for. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that if you want to go out into that, it's not simple anymore. Now it gets technical. So you have to have the proper technical understanding for that technique to work. You know, to just throw it, oh, it doesn't, it, we, you know, we just chant, then if we just chant, then why do we need to worship Shiva? Why add that in? You know, because we always like to add something that's something different, unique, special, and we got the real, inside scoop on what's happening here. You know, does that make sense? So it's just a common thing that you always want, you know, the living entity wants to be unique. That's the Visesha. That's the Prajumna aspect. You know, so how we're special, how we're different, that makes our identity unique. So we always have to be careful of that. That's being used properly, right? Otherwise, then we're not, and it's, you know, Krishna wants to accept it that or not. That's up to him. You can't say it's because I chant, because you can't. It's not then not that because you do something, Krishna has to respond. It's that the attitude's right. So if all you know is that this is what the acharyas have mentioned and you're not knowing the difference, and based on that faith you're doing it, then it will work. But if you're thinking, I know technically how this works and all that, and you don't, then you won't get the benefit. But because we're chanting the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, when we chant, we're worshiping the Panchatattva, you'll get the benefit from there. You know? So it kind of becomes a bit foolproof. Is that okay? Yes.
Yes. This actually explains why sometimes in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned that Shiva can give liberation, and sometimes it mentioned he can avoid liberation.
No.
Because it's different aspects of the...
Sadashiva can, because he's non-different from Vishnu. It's just Vishnu taking on this mood. But the demigod, then you're not taking it in that aspect at all. He's a guna avatar, but so many things are avatars. You know, it's just like, let's say, a pit bull. They're like the avatar of Krishna's vibhuti on ripping your leg off. You know? Like that, you know, along with crocodiles and a few other, you know, sharks, and, you know, like that. They all have their, well, variously. But of them, it does in the Gita say that Krishna is the shark. You know, how you say, of all things that can rip your leg off, he's the shark. You know, right? Is it okay? Yeah. Yes.
Srila Shivaram Swami, his book Chant More, wrote that we don't need, according to Srila Prabhupada's work, we don't need to chant Panchatattva Mahamantra before japa, only before kirtan.
Only before?
Kirtan.
Yeah, only before. You don't have to chant before. Is if you do, it's nice. But kirtan, then we'll sing the Guru Pranam, then we're going to sing Panchatattva, and then we're going to sing Hare Krishna. And even then, I think he had told Chutananda that when you're doing an artik, because artiks of a limited time, it's not so long, as he said, half of the artik kirtan should be Hare Krishna mantra. So therefore, Panchatattva, then he just chant it three times. Right, because otherwise, then you know, things get too long. Sometimes they do like Guru Vastika so long, and then the Panchatattva, and then you get in, you know, 2, 3, 1, you know, Hare Krishnas, and then the kirtan ends, and then a few Hare Bowls and Jai Prabhupada's, and probably 1.5 the kirtan to be. So therefore, you'll see sometimes when we're doing the, you know, like a kirtan mela, you know, a kirtan pro, where they're going to be chanting for hours. Then if they chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra many, many times, it doesn't matter, because then they're going to chant Hare Krishna for the next hour or two. You understand? So it's in kirtan, it's specifically there. Then in japa, you can chant it beforehand if you like, because the point is by their grace you can chant nicely. But it's not a rule that you have to. That's the whole point, is that we say you have to chant, but the point is Hare Krishna mantra is independent. No, it works despite whether we chant or not. That has to be clear. Then, to be able to chant nicely, we may take blessings from the Panchatattva, but it's not that the Hare Krishna mantra won't work unless we chant Panchatattva. Do you understand? So therefore, then sometimes you see is that before someone starts chanting in the morning, then they'll say Panchatattva mantra, and then the whole day they'll just chant and never say again. Right? And then some will be, every time they pick up their beads to chant, they'll do the Panchatattva, and then they'll chant for however long they're chanting. Some will chant before every round, they'll chant Panchatattva. Right? So it's fine, it doesn't matter. But it should be understood as we're chanting Hare Krishna, not the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. So therefore, those who say, well, the Panchatattva Maha Mantra is more powerful, therefore, why don't we chant japa of that? Or they do chant. But Prabhupada's pointed out is, but that's not what Lord Chaitanya has given. It may be more powerful, but Lord Chaitanya has given us to chant Hare Krishna. Because what's our point of power? We want the power. We want that effect of that. So that's karma. It's we're supposed to be pleasing Krishna. We're chanting to please Krishna, not because of power. Like that? Or at least the, how do you say it? Power.
We noticed that many Indians who came here or in India, they don't know about Lord Chaitanya. They consider the Panchatattva is a five Pandavas.
They say, see, it's when you're dealing with Hindus, they can say anything. As long as it seems a little esoteric and it kind of is within the things, you know, they can come up with anything. So I wouldn't worry about the Hindus at all.
I mean, when we preach to them, do we need to mostly put emphasis on
the... No, we just, every time we chant in the kirtan, say the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. Because the point is if by pointing it out in that, then we're going to end up with all these discussions, why waste your time? But in the kirtan, they've already chanted Panchatattva Maha Mantra, they've chanted Hare Krishna, afterwards you have prasad, we're good. So if you don't have one Hindu Bindu discussion, you know, your life will go on quite well. And theirs will also. But if you can discuss and all that and bring out the thing, then nice. But the point is let them get purified by the kirtan and prasad and association first. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you're cooking, right? You cook, you're not sure, you take out a grain of rice, you squeeze it, and if it's not cooked, then you keep cooking. You don't at that time try to squeeze all the rices that, no. So something, if it comes up in a conversation, you see that they're still giving all these wonderful Hindu answers, you know, then you just leave it. Don't even just change the conversation right on the spot and go into something else, you know. You know, like how, you know, even though they're nice, you really like them, but cauliflower is a bit expensive this time of year. That's you know, that's why we went with the eggplant subsidy, you know, something like that. And then, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, you got to be careful, you know, because that's something they can get into, it's saving money. So just immediately just change the conversation. Does that make sense? So the point is because faith means that the heart is purified. You have faith when there's a certain amount of agyata sukriti. So if you see as you start these conversations and it doesn't work, means the agyata sukriti is not enough yet. Therefore, just keep up the agyata sukriti. Just see how to engage them. Doing services, taking prasad, the kirtan, hearing discussions on Bhagavatam, you know, Bhagavad Gita, like this. Does that make sense?
No, one person donated a lot of money for distributing books in Bengali to Indian people in Parikrama. And we discuss now which books better to distribute them about Lord Chaitanya or about tradition or about Lord Krishna.
It doesn't matter. It's whichever one fits the budget. Each one's better than the other. Like that. You know, I think the first book that was printed in Bengali was Gita Gan. So that's a very good book. The Bengalis really like that. Or another one that Prabhupada wrote in Bengali was the...
Renunciation to Reason.
Sorry?
Renunciation
yes.
to Reason.
What's it called? Gita... No, not... What's it? Vairagya Vidya. They're both small. Gita Gan smaller. So it depends how many you want to distribute. And it's just, it's not a matter of, it's, they're the same person, you have to remember. See, Krishna with Radharani, in the interacting with her, that's Radha and Krishna. Krishna taking her mood to appreciate her mood, that's Lord Chaitanya. You know, so the discussion is that, the point is Lord Chaitanya, we're saying that, but if you don't, from worshipping Lord Chaitanya, you don't worship Krishna, then you still won't get the bride. And if we're worshipping Krishna but ignore Lord Chaitanya, how are you going to understand the process to get there and the attitude? So the two are non-different, they go together. That therefore the altar, the standard you could say of our altar, you know, is Lord Chaitanya with Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense? Or you take it out bigger than you have Gornitai, then Radha Krishna and Jagannath, or like this. But the point is that you'll see, and here, Prabhupada established here, Lord Chaitanya with Radha and Madhava. So that is the realization that was given to Raghunath Das, not Raghunath Das, also with an R. No. Ramananda Rai. Sometimes you get R's and you can't get. Remember the other day it was M's, all the M's, and you don't know which one goes with which. Ramananda Rai, that's what he showed him. So then that's a special thing. That's you know, a very elevated position. So that kind of altar is a very special altar. You see, most of the Gaudiya Mats are all that altar. Does that make sense? Because then you're understanding how Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna.
When you speak about Shiva, when we have the four Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya,
yeah.
So with this devotee Rudra, okay.
That means Rudra as the, how do you say, as the Vaishnava. So for us that would mean the Sada Shiva aspect.
Okay, is still like Brahma is still existing in this world.
The point is Shambhu is it means Sada Shiva is expanded as Shambhu. Point is, it's just a matter of how you're dealing with them. It's just like Paramatma in the heart is, you know, Kiradakshai Vishnu. But if you understand that Krishna is the source, then you interact as Krishna. You may have that form, but it doesn't mean that you don't get the other aspect. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It depends on our...
consciousness, yeah. Everything's consciousness. Yes. It's not about the secondary form, because we have to remember the primary and secondary forms are all Krishna anyway. There's nothing that's not Krishna. So that's the whole point, is everything being Krishna, everything's connected to Krishna, it's just whether we connect it or not. So you don't connect it to Krishna, then we'll say it's a devata. You're connected to Krishna, then you're doing Sada Shiva. Yes.
Sadashiv, as we know that he stays in the middle there, spiritual world and the material world, they are there. So that planet where Sadashiv stays, is there his devotees also who stay with him eternally, or ultimately they also go?
No, they would stay there eternally with him. Because they're worshipping Vishnu as servants of Shiva. Yeah, why not? Why wouldn't they stay there? Yes?
In Brahma Samhita, it is mentioned that point, more detailed, is that within the material universe, there's that place, it's called Mahakalapura.
Right.
So it is within the coverings of the universe.
Yes.
And then Sadashiva Loka is outside.
Yes.
So
it's two different things.
Yeah. We shouldn't confuse the two places.
Yeah. Okay. So one's within the universe. So that would be in the last covering?
Yeah.
Okay. In the Prakriti.
Yeah.
And then Sadashiva is outside, but it's still within the Mahatattva that I know of. Because otherwise he's connected with Mahavishnu. No? It doesn't mean they're controlled by the modes, because they're outside the modes. They're outside the universes. But they're still within the one quarter.
I don't think so. It seems by the description that it is outside of the all the conditioning.
But the conditioning is within the universe.
Yes.
Because outside the individual universes, then you're dealing in the primary and secondary creation.
Right.
And all that. And that's where then Sadashiva would be the control. Because Sadashiva is simply the aspect of Mahavishnu as the destroyer. Right? Because otherwise, in Brahman itself, where's the connection? Where's the relationship? Because we have to understand everything's Brahman. It's just a matter of whether that Brahman is covered by the illusory aspect of Ajnana. You know, because just like Mahavishnu's within that and his palace and everything, and they're in the transcendental, so why wouldn't Shiva be? It's within the individual universe, that's where then the problem comes up.
Yes. Because it seems like the one within the universe, when the universe is destroyed, it is destroyed. But the other one is eternal, like Prabhu mentioned.
Yeah.
All the devotees are there.
Well, it's just like Mahavishnu in his scene, it's always there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, because the one is an expansion, and then it goes back in.
Right.
Like that. So. Yeah, because those guys that are in the Prakriti covering that are thinking they're Brahman, whether they're there, or whether Mahavishnu has breathed them back inside and they're in him, they wouldn't know the difference anyway. So it's not that you know, it's like the what do you call it? You know, that kind of trope where somebody falls asleep or something, or steps out for a minute and then total insanity happens, and then they walk back in and what happened here? You know, or they're completely oblivious. They don't even know. They just go on as if everything's normal and everything. You know. So it's the same. Okay, it's nice to notice it's two separate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, on the point that Madhuji mentioned is that Bhaktivinoda Maharaj, who is from South originally,
okay.
He mentioned an interesting story that from his childhood, everybody told him that you should chant this Maha Mantra, actually Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Right.
But when he grew up, he asked, well, what is this mantra? And nobody could explain it to him. And then, he on pilgrimage, he visited several places.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw two brothers, deities on the altar, brothers dancing. And he asked all the pujaris, what are those deities? Nobody knew. Like people in the south, since Mahaprabhu traveled, you know, so many places, they stole those deities.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the tradition was lost. They still worship them.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't really know who are the Gornitari.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the Mahamantra? They chant it.
Yeah.
You know, Guruvaya, and everybody chants
it. Yeah.
But they don't know the meaning, the real meaning of the Mahamantra.
No. Like that. It's explained in the Kali Santarana Upanishad, like that. But, you know, they don't know. Yeah. Even Sri Rangan, they have that deity of Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath and like that. And it's maintained by the temple. I think the puja is done, you know, taken care of by the head Jari's family.
Yeah.
Like that. But yeah, they won't know necessarily. The family may know, but no one else will know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's only the head pujari himself. The rest of the family couldn't care less. You know, like there was the head pujari, the house has been there, and they've had that part of the part that they live in, and that part next that's connected. It's just the next kind of like part over.
Yeah.
It's its own kind of entity, but at the same time, it's always been connected to the main flat, main house, and that's been like that since Lord Chaitanya was there. So when Lord Chaitanya came, he stayed in that part of the house. You know, it's kind of like a guest quarters that's complete in itself, but you know, like a granny flat, you know, kind of thing. But then I'm not sure if it happened, but the rest of the family's pushing that they sell that or use that as a regular place to live. But the family's always trying to not to, because that's where Lord Chaitanya did the puja and the deities are there. They do all their daily yajnas and that in that room and stuff like that. So what happened, whether they, you know, got rid of all that and or not, I don't know. But yeah, so even the rest of the family doesn't appreciate. So it's only the head pujari himself and his family understand.
Like a normal home.
Sorry?
It's not like a normal home.
Oh, okay, so they did the family one.
The temple is there.
The temple's there, but then that place where Lord Chaitanya worshipped and all that, that's gone. Sure, that what, the deities, they just moved into the house? There's that deity of Vishnu that Lord Chaitanya worshipped for those 4 months. You don't know? Okay.
I don't.
You know?
Yeah. When I was in hospital, one old Bengali woman, she was from Shantipur. Yes, but she never heard about Advaita Acharya. But she chanted Hare Krishna. And I was amazed that many people here know Hare Krishna mantra, but they don't know about Panchatattva and Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah, that's standard.
Does it mean they can get only Avyata Sukriti from Hare Krishna mantra?
Well, I mean, if they're not having that faith and have surrendered to the process, they're getting Avyata Sukriti anyway. Does that make sense? When Shraddha is there, when there's faith in Krishna, and that devotion to Krishna, and that is the important element, that takes prominence over everything else, at that point, now you're dealing with bhakti. Anything before that, that's all Agyata Sukriti. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you have someone born in the family of devotees, but they haven't like surrendered to Krishna and had that's all Agyata Sukriti. Right? Does that make sense? But when they surrender, then the volume of their Agyata Sukriti will be very great, so then they'll move forward very nicely. You know, it's like you see Prahlad Maharaj, at 3 years old, then he's worshipping the Lord and all that. So now that's bhakti. Does that make sense? So, point is Agyata Sukriti and bhakti are the same thing, just one you know it's bhakti and one you don't know it's bhakti. So if the children know this is devotion, they're doing it because of that, that's bhakti. Other things they're doing, then it's Agyata Sukriti. Does that make sense? So when they surrender to Guru and take that, then it moves in that direction. So the point is it's not a thing that, oh, Agyata Sukriti is something less. It just means Agyata Sukriti is just that they don't know it's bhakti. Otherwise, how does it have potencies unless it is bhakti? Like, devotees are doing Rath Yatra and Lord Jagannath's out there and the kirtan's there. People see that. They don't know it's bhakti. They get a Agyata Sukriti. Those who do know it's devotion and they go there because Jagannath is there, then that'll be known as bhakti. It's the same thing. It's just like this. Let us say, when let's say you have a preparation from a particular cuisine, okay, now anybody eats it, it's nice, they'll appreciate it, but it's, to them it's just some food. But if someone knows the cuisine and knows that, you know, that the significance of that, then it has so much more appreciation when they eat it. Does that make sense? But it's still the same food. It's just a matter of whether you actually know what you're doing or you don't know what's going on. So that's why the karmi, otherwise why would the karmis advance if it's not bhakti? Because only bhakti is independent. So despite them being karmis, why would it function if it's not bhakti? Does that make sense? So Agyata Sukriti is not something less itself. Well, when we refer to Agyata Sukriti, we're talking about the consciousness of the person who's performing it. Bhakti is bhakti. Like the holy name is a holy name. It's not that because of my chanting, now it's Shuddha Nam. No, it's Shuddha Nam means I appreciate the name. The name is the same all the time. Right? You're walking down the street and there's a bunch of, you know, youngsters over there, a little bit rowdy, and then one of them shouts out, you know, hey, Hare Krishna, you know, they're being kind of derogative. He's still, the name is still the name. But because he doesn't appreciate it, then the name only reciprocates with him on that level that they're at. So therefore, it's Agyata Sukriti. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say you have some, you know, very well-renowned person. You know, a big dignitary or something like that. But they happen to be, let's say, walking in the park, right? They may be walking with all their bodyguards and all that, but they're walking in the park. And they're going along, and there's some little kids there. You know, some four-year-old kids. They're there, let's say, playing ball or something, right? And they, you know, and they're playing, they kick the ball, and the ball rolls over to this dignitary, right? And so the kids will, you know, ask that person, hey, kick it back, give us, you know, kick the ball. They don't know who he is. Couldn't care less who he is. So does that mean now he's not a dignitary anymore? He's still who he is. But now, is he going to tell the kids, do you know who I am? Right? No, he's just going to kick the ball back and smile. And then the kids will go, yeah, thank you, and wave, and he'll wave, and they'll walk on. And then the moms who are sitting over on the bench far away, they go, you know, hey, do you know who that was? You know, like that. No, who's that? Yeah, so the point is the name doesn't change. Bhakti doesn't change. It's just that how they reciprocate with you changes. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise, let's say it was a bunch of college kids, right? And they kick the ball, they kick that, you know, and they ask, hey, can you kick it back? They kind of know who he is. Then it's kind of a fun, hey, you know, the president kicked the ball back, you know, like this and that kind of thing. But let's say that they're nasty. Then he'll just tell one of his bodyguards to kick it back. You know, they probably won't kick it. They'll pick it up, walk with it a little bit, then maybe throw it back. Or, yeah, carry it with him. It's a security threat. You know, you don't know what it is. You understand? So it's all on the attitude. So the whole thing is Krishna consciousness is about attitude. It's not about anything else. Does that make sense? So, therefore, there's recommended activities. Therefore, trying to develop the attitude of devotion, right? The attitude of those who have prema. Then prema is expressed through natural forms. So that's why then the recommended activities are the forms of pure bhakti. Right? And that's why we have some certain activities we do. So because they're different from what we're used to, it seems different. But for, let's say, like, you know, a smarta Brahman, like we're talking about in South and this and that, so for them, it's the same activity. And it's like here, he's never known about devotees. No one else knows about devotees, but he's been chanting Hare Krishna since he was a little kid. Because someone told him, you know, this is the best mantra to chant, because Shastra says. Does that make sense? So they don't know, they're just doing it. So for the smartest, you tell them, okay, now if you want to be a devotee, you got to get up at 4 in the morning. It's kind of like, yeah, we do that every day. When you get up, you got to brush your teeth and take a bath. You know, yeah, we do that also. And you have to put this mud on your forehead. And, yeah, we do that also. You know, and you got to wear a dhoti and a chadar. Yeah, we wear that all day. You know, that's all we wear. You know, and then you gotta, you're gonna worship some deities. And says, yeah, we're doing that. You know, well, our family's always done that. And then you're gonna offer to them boga that you haven't, you know, tasted before and all that and all that. And then after that, only after you've offered it, then you can eat it as prasad. Says, yeah, that's what we do so many 3 times a day. You're like that. So you know, what's gonna be the difference? So for the smarta, the lifestyle between what we do and they do, it won't change. Just, we'll just be worshiping Krishna, and they'll have to get rid of, you know, about 200 deities. But you know what I'm saying? So that's that part. There's not going to be any difference in the lifestyle. You know, because they're already following the Vedic tradition. If you're not following Vedic tradition, then everything's new, and oh, this is, wow, this is like, you know, completely changed. But it's not. It's just a matter of, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say someone grew up in a family of thieves, so then anything they see in the opportunity, they will take it. You know, so now if they end up somehow or another, you know, something happens to the family and the child ends up in foster care or something with a new family, and that they go to take something, they say, hey, don't steal. It's kind of like, well, what's wrong with stealing? You know? And then you have to explain and this and that. So it's like to them, it's a dynamic change in their lifestyle. But actually just, no, it's normal. So the practices of bhakti, these are just normal activities of a pious living entity. That's all. The living entity is pious. That's what they do. They do the activities that are recommended in Shastra. And what's recommended in Shastra is what is in support of bhakti, either directly or indirectly. Right? So when we just get down to the essence, we only take the ones that are directly useful for bhakti. And all the indirect ones, most of them are gotten rid of. A few of them remain. Varnashram can remain. A few others can remain. Giving in charity or this or that. You know what I'm saying? Like that. The ones that, you know, the more goodness is there, less passion and ignorance, then you know, those will be kept. Just because we are conditioned. But otherwise, the activities of bhakti, those are eternal. Bhakti itself is eternal. So this idea that there's something separate from, that's the same illusion that you have knowledge and activities that are separate from Krishna. Just like I said, okay, we have the devotional activities, but then we have our practical activities. But they're seeing that this jnana and kriya shakti is separate from Krishna. But if Krishna is everything, what's separate? What's not to see in connection with Krishna? So it's just a matter of time before we start seeing the direct activities in connection to Krishna, that we start to slowly see the indirect also in connection with Krishna, until we see everything in our field of activities in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what we're doing. So since it's about attitude, that's why then those activities that are performed in the spiritual world, the attitude of pure devotion then matches the expression of that through the activities of the spiritual world. And so that's what we do here. Right? Here in the material platform, they're known as piety. Because we can say it's only devotees do this, but anybody who follows the Vedic culture basically does everything we do. Does that make sense? You know, so it's basically that. So why? Because that's the activities of the spiritual world. Right? So it's that. So for us, you're trying to change. The whole process is changing the consciousness, and we change the activities as they become useful. That's why it says in the beginning, you only have to change consciousness. So this idea is that I'm a Westerner and identify with that, and I have my attachments to the Western culture and food and activities and, you know, hobbies and whatever it is, that you can start from there. You just have to change the consciousness. Yes, that is the beginning position. Right? But as you go, these activities of the karma are not necessarily useful in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what is the, let us just take for an example, what is the significance of we call it near beer. Means it's, what do you call it? Non-alcoholic beer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So sometimes you get people, they want to have a party, so they'll get some non-alcoholic beer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, but it still tastes just as bad as beer, actually worse. Right? But for them, it's a significance because it's beer, but it's not beer. And so they like that idea.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say in China, someone's vegetarian. They're going to grow up with tofu, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now those who are meat eaters and then become vegetarian, then the tofu now represents meat.
Yes.
You understand? So it has that significance for them. So as long as that's there, they can use it, but it's not an advanced position. Because they're attached to something mundane, but they're connecting it to Krishna. But at some point, it's just you're cooking things for Krishna. Does that make sense? So you might not use tofu. You might use paneer. Right? Does that make sense? You know. Remember, who is it? I think it was... Yeah, they were telling me before, I don't know if we got it, but I think it was before in Buijan in Hong Kong. They're cooking for the feast and they put ghee on and for frying. It's when you fry it, it heats up and the smell goes. So people in the apartment building were complaining about the bad smell. Then I remember one time walking into the same, because we were in the same building, right, beforehand. And I came to the ground floor, and I think there was some restaurant there. And it means after, I didn't know what it was at the time, but afterwards I found out. They were deep frying stinky tofu. There's one kind of tofu that I don't know what they do to it, but it really smells. You know, it smells like compost, you know. That's on a good day. And so when you fry it, the smell goes everywhere. I heard even because the tourists freak out that it's banned to fry it out on the street. It's street food. You can only cook it in restaurants so that smell doesn't go out and bother the people. So I came in, and I'm smelling the smell, and I asked the lift, you know, the elevator guy. He says, "What's that bad smell?" And he... I don't smell any bad smell. So they're cooking something in the restaurant, but so for him, stinky poo, stinky. Tofu. <Yes. laughs> Turn the word around backwards. The stinky tofu then smelled good, but the ghee smelled bad. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, you know, point is that if it's according to our rules and all that, you can use it. But the significance of it because of our attachment, then that's not so important. You understand? It's that you want to cook something nice for Krishna. Now, if let's say the person, they're new in Krishna, they really like something, so they want to cook that for Krishna because in their mind this is the best they cook. Then that's very nice. It's the devotional. But if it's about, I want to cook this because I'm attached to it, that will be less. So one has to understand, like Prabhu was pointing out, is sometimes you see them talk about Shiva in a transcendental position, sometimes not, the Bhagavatam. Depends on which way you're looking at it. What's the attitude? What's the mood? So these things of engaging, you don't have to change consciousness. As you're living now, you live that same lifestyle connected to Krishna. That's a starting point. Then as you see, as the conscious becomes purified, those elements that you're using that are not necessarily very high class or very purified, then you might replace those for a higher grade. You know what I'm saying? You might change the stinky tofu for regular tofu. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a natural progression. So all we're trying to do is change the consciousness from I'm the controller and enjoyer to I'm serving a Krishna. That's our whole process. So studying the Sandarbha is so that we are convinced of that. Yes.
And that related with the consciousness, which the Taittiriya Upanishad explains about the Purushas,
then at the Manomaya Purusha only all the Vedas, like one Veda is the head, another Veda is the right arm, left arm, and one is the basis.
Yes, yes.
But the next Vijnanamaya Purusha is knowing the inner meaning is the basis.
Okay.
And then knowing intelligence is right arm, something like that.
Okay.
So basically all the activities are just in the Manomaya Purusha. Then Vijnanamaya Purusha is actually understanding it. So we may be chanting and all.
Okay, so it means the piety, but then understanding. So you're saying before these examples of that lady from Shantipur, that devotee, means before when he was a kid, then they're telling him to chant and all that. That's the Manomoy platform. Then Vijnanamoy, they'll actually understand what it's for. Those Vishnu forms, by their smiling glances, which resembled the pure light of the moon, which were also tinged with red, created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.13.50. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Those Vishnu forms blessed the devotees with their clear glances and smiles, which resembled the increasingly full light of the moon, Shreyakai Rabachandrikavi Taranam. As maintainers, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling. Their smiles resembled the mode of goodness, protecting all the desires of the devotees, and the glancing of their eyes resembled the mode of passion. Actually, in this verse, the word Rajaha means not passion but affection. In the material world, Rajaguna is passion, but in the spiritual world, it is affection. Right? So everything has its natural position. So there you have the goodness, and that will be the action, that position of doing everything, you know, to please the other person, right? Because here it's I'm doing the rules because I should. There you're doing because you want to please Krishna, right? Does that make sense? And then because then the passion because the affection, and then the ignorance is then because the existence of things. Everything exists; it's eternal, right? The spiritual state. Does that make sense? Yeah. So when the spiritual state transforms, then it becomes the illusory state that's here, right? When that affection for Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then it becomes that, you know, that lust here, because prema is for with Krishna. The other devotee is the same thing; it's affection. So then that becomes transformed here as lust, and right, and then the spiritual situation becomes transformed into avidya, into a position of, you know, ignorance. So.
Reflection.
Yes, it's a reflection. Yes. In the material world, affection is contaminated by Rajaguna and Tamaguna. But in the Shuddha Sattva, the affection that maintains the devotees is transcendental. The word Svakartanam refers to great desires. As mentioned in this verse, the glance of Lord Vishnu creates the desire of the devotees. Desires of the devotees. Pure devotee, however, has no desires. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glances create variegated desires in relation to Krishna and devotional service. So they have no material desires. So Krishna's glance then creates variety of desires to perform services to Krishna in various ways. Right? So mode of passion here creates the variety needed. Right? But in the spiritual world, there's no passion. It just creates the variety that's there. Right? So the Kriya is variety. The Icha is Krishna's desire, and it's filled through the variety that's in the Kriya, the variety of activities. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It sounds very much like the Kamagati description.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. Well, that's what you see, is all these things that go back to that. That's the fun part, is that when one starts to appreciate, means we've appreciated the Dasa Mool for some time, that, you know, the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, and then the Dasa Mool, but now we see in the Sandarbha, kind of the level that it's bringing out, how it's all in connection with Krishna, and the finest points. Then you see reads something more like Gita and all that, you'll see as these same points are being made by Prabhupada, but the language used is such that if you only catch the external form of it, or you know, some simpler form of it, it's still connected to Krishna and it works. But it's working because of this, the you know, because of this actual position. So the technical points are there, but that's the nice thing about the principle, is that it doesn't have to be technical to work. It works anyway. Like that. So, yeah. In the material world, desire is a product of Rajaguna and Tamaguna. But in the spiritual world, but desire in the spiritual world gives rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. Thus the word svakartanam refers to eagerness to serve Krishna. So that sidelong glance at Krishna then inspires a devotee with this eagerness to render variety of services. Right? In Vrindavan, there's a place where there was no temple, but a devotee desired, let there be a temple and seva, devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of the devotee. Right? So meaning, Krishna is glancing, and therefore, then, there'll be a temple. Right? Yeah? Okay. The expressions concerning sattva and rajas are figurative, not real. Varna means form, right? So sattva and rajas are figurative. It just means they're not real, because you don't have sattva and rajas in the spiritual world. You only have the platform of pure goodness. But it just means the activities that are performed within that. That's the point. Bhakti is the origin. So it's only in ignorance that we think that these are functioning on their own. Right? Varna means form, not just color, such as white color. Since the subject concerns the gunas and indicates the forms manifested by the gunas. Right? So varnam, like Krishna varnam, tusha Krishna, means doesn't have the form of Krishna. Or he doesn't have the color of Krishna. Because he doesn't have the form of Krishna, because he has the mood of Radharani. Right? But she's golden, so then it also, so it matches. So that's the form and the color go together. The form of Vishnu for protection, a guna avatar, is well known to be Shama in complexion and lives in the milk ocean. This is shown in Paramatma Sandarbha. And the destroyer Shiva is shown to be white in color, not black. These forms are described in the Sandhyopashana by Gobhila. Brahma is golden in complexion, right? Because he's Hiranyagarbha, right? So it has that aspect. And then Shiva is white, Sada Shiva. Right? So that's where it goes back to all these places. Thus, there's no rule for relating the complexions of the personalities to the gunas. Bhaka and other entities at the lowest tamas are also blackish. Right? So there's nothing of relating them because of the gunas. Right? Because Rajas, but he's golden color. You know, Lord Shiva is tamas, but he's white color. Right, and Krishna is in pure goodness, and he's black color. So you don't match them by colors. Does that make sense? Yes.
This is the kind of purport to the previous place, 10.3.20, continuing the purport. So
10.3.20. Oh, okay. It means the. Where was 10?
My Lord.
Oh, my Lord, your form is transcendental through the three material modes. Yet for the maintenance of the three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu if for goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish. And at the end, where there's a need for annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.20. Right? So it's not that they're taking on, but then the modes take on these colors. They do these things. The modes do these aspects. Yeah? What you could do here is even mention the Puttavriti, just that, you know, this is continuing the commentary on that. Yeah. Okay. You manifest, Bibarshi, your form to your devotees by mercy, Sva Mayaya. Red represents the intense passion of creation in Rajas. Black represents the complete absence of the Surup of the Lord in Tamas. Partivad Daruno Dhumas Tasmad Agnis Trayi Mayaha. Tamasas Tu Rajas Tasmat. Sattvam yad brahma darshanam. Smoke is superior to dull wood, and fire, sacred to the Vedas, is superior to smoke. Similarly, Rajas is superior to Tamas, and Sattva is superior to Rajas, since Sattva is favorable for realizing the Lord. Right? So you have the smoke, dull wood, so nothing's happening. You have the smoke that's better, because it has the potential that you could get to fire, because fire is then what is sacred in the Vedas. Mm-hmm. Right? So in the same way is that ignorance is you know, just existing there. Set Rajas is better because there's some activity. But bringing it to goodness, that's the activity that is recommended in the Vedas. Mm-hmm. Right? So passion and ignorance aren't really recommended. Mm-hmm. Purva Paksha. Quote, why do you describe through words having another meaning, something which misleads people? For destroying the population, the color black is accepted by Tamas. That is the meaning, right? So they're saying, no, it means black. So they're trying to say Shiva's black. But then here he's saying, no, he's white. Right? Uttara, the next verse answers. Oh my Lord, proprietor of all creation, you have now appeared in my home, desiring to protect this world. You will kill all the armies that are moving all over the world, along with a host of demons dressed as Kshatriya kings. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.321. Near Vyudhyamana means moving about. The meaning is this. Let us forget about other proofs concerning your Shuddha Sattva nature's Brahman. You accept a form according to the guna, such as sleeping during a pralaya, since pralaya is a matter of grief. But you do not do that at this time. You should give happiness to the world by protecting it, by destroying the tamasic demons. But instead, on the pretext of killing them, you mercifully give them liberation beyond the gunas. This is like on the pretext of bringing salt, bringing a horse. Footnote 4. Saindava means salt and horse. Right. Yeah, so that was that example before. Bring the Saindava. You know, so if he's out with his armor on, it means horse, not salt. And if he's at the dinner table, it means salt, not a horse. So then you have to see what they're talking about. What's the context? So they're talking about Vishnu and doing all that. He does all these things because he doesn't need Shiva to destroy things, because he's the origin of that. But it doesn't mean that destruction's not going on in this way. Now, the demons are being destroyed because of their mode of ignorance. But it doesn't mean that it's the same as the effect of ignorance, because you see these demons, when they're killed, they're destroyed, they get liberation, which is pure goodness. So we have to understand the colors in a more subtle fashion. If you just take it in the gross form, then it won't be understood. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.